So really happy again to be with all of you. Thank you for making the time and thank you for the opportunity. As Jaini Taipuru mentioned, we're all missing Vrindavan. Vrindavan is the home of all the Vaishnavas. We're not residents of London. We're not residents of the UK. This is our Seva Stali. This is the place where we serve. But ultimately, the Leela Stali, the place of divine play, the place where all the magic really happens directly with Krishna at the center of everything, and the place where we can really fulfill the longing within our heart is Vrindavan. And therefore, an opportunity like this weekend where we can absorb our minds and hearts in Sri Vrindavan Dham is such a valuable thing. So I'm very honored to be beginning this retreat where we try to dive into the wonderful pastimes that occurred in Sri Vrindavan Dham. I'll be sharing a PowerPoint and I'll share some of my humble thoughts with you for my own purification. At any point, if you have any comments, questions, just put them down there on the chat and then we'll try to kind of open it up for a question and answer, maybe pretty quickly. I won't speak actually too long. I'd like to have a discussion with all of you. And today, as Natasha Mataji mentioned, we are discussing the wonderful pastime of Krishna killing Trinavarta. And so, yes, let us dive into that. So I'm going to share with you my screen just with some few little thoughts on here and kind of let's see where we go. So Trinavarta, the whirlwind demon, the one who went high into the sky, taking Krishna with him. And today our subject matter is we're looking at Trinavarta and we are specifically looking at our own spiritual life in relation to this wonderful pastime. Trinavarta thought he was flying. He thought he was up there, flying high in the sky. But then he came crashing down. So are we flying or are we falling? Maybe all of you can tell me on the chat, how are you feeling today? How are you feeling this week in Krishna consciousness? Tell me if you're flying. Tell me if you're falling. You can just write flying or falling. And if you don't think you're kind of in between, you can just tell me your fear. Kanchana Bailey is falling. Oh no, Sydney's flying. Narin's flying. Jainita is always flying. A few more falling. in between, Braj Dulali, yes. Spiritual life sometimes is like a roller coaster. Yes. Tanushri is saying she's trying to be steady. It's such a up and down thing we go through. And Trinavarta and the killing of Trinavarta really gives us a lot to think about that. Bhupendra saying he's being carried by the devotees. Yes. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami says, Durgame Patime Indrasya Skalat Pada Gater Muhu Swakripa Yastidanena Shanta Shantva Valambanam. Kaviraj Goswami says, my path is very difficult and I'm slipping again and again. But the stick of the mercy of the Vaishnavas is holding me up. And therefore, even if you're falling, don't worry. You're in the right place because there's lots of sticks here, the sticks of the Vaishnavas who will carry you. But we don't want to just survive in spiritual life. We want to be flying high in the skies of bhakti, experiencing the beauty, joy, and wonderful fulfillment that comes from Shuddha Bhakti, pure bhakti, pure devotion. And so let us discuss that. Now we're entering Vrindavan for the next couple of days. And before we enter Vrindavan and we try to embark on this journey, I want to share something with you, which hopefully will help all of us to be more absorbed in the Leela and in the wonderful narrations of Krishna in Vrindavan. This right here is a very, very famous verse from the Bhagavatam. I'm sure many of you know it. It's a verse which occurs in the first chapter of the Bhagavatam. And the first chapter of Bhagavatam is really setting the scene in so many ways. And this verse really sets the scene for our own life and our own journey and our own endeavors to try to advance in spiritual life in the age that we're living in at the moment. Prayenal paishaha sabhya kala vasmin yuge jana manda sumanda matayo manda bhagya hyupadrita. This is a very, very famous verse. This is the way Srila Prabhupada translates it. O learned one. This is Sutta Goswami speaking to the sages of Naimisharanya. O learned one, in this iron age of Kali, men, women, almost always have but short lives. They are quarrelsome, lazy, misguided, unlucky, and above all, always disturbed. Now, I don't know if there's anyone on this call who would say that they're not suffering from even one of those problems. This is our situation. This is our difficulty. Therefore, Prabhupada once said in one lecture, spiritual life in Kali Yuga, very difficult proposition. Not so easy, because we have so many things against us. Yes. Every acharya gives us extra realization, extra insight, gives their own gloss on every single verse, which helps us to understand it in a more profound and more deep way and a more nuanced way. And therefore, the great sage, the great teacher, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his infinite wisdom, he looks at this verse and he gives an interesting insight. He doesn't say these are just a list of qualities. What he says is that there's actually a very deliberate progression that's going on in this verse. And this is the way he describes it. He says spiritual life in Kali Yuga is very difficult. Number one, you can see here in the Sanskrit, number one, because we have short lives. In other words, we don't have time. Time is not on our side, unfortunately. We have short lives, and even in the short lives we do have, we're so engaged in fulfilling so many different duties that we don't have time. Prabhupada once wrote an article in Back to Godhead called No Time, the Chronic Disease of Modern Man. So the first problem Vishwanath Chakravarti Pad says is that we have short lives, we have no time. But then he says, even if someone says they have time, even if somehow someone makes time, the second problem, manda, they're lazy. Have you ever met devotees? They say like, I have no time, I have no time. I would love to chant, I would love to read, I would love to just absorb myself in service, but I don't have time. And then the moment they do have time, then a little bit of laziness and lethargy kicks in somehow or other, even when you have time. As they say in the ISKCON jargon, we get a little bit spaced out, even when we do have time. Chakravarti Pad goes further in his statement and he says, but look, if someone makes time to read the Shastra, and one is not lazy, they're actually really active in trying to understand Shastra, the third problem that they'll face is that even if they're not lazy and they're really trying hard, they're less intelligent. And therefore, you read the Shastra, but practically, you can't understand it, you can't decipher what's being said, and you're not able to grasp the essence because sumanda matayo, we don't have the brain power, we don't have the intelligence, we don't have the spiritual acumen. We're not able to articulate what is this actually saying and what does it mean for my life. Therefore, he says it's another problem. But then Chakravarti Pad says, but say you are intelligent and you are able to decipher to some extent, what the Shastra is saying, the next problem is that you can be easily misguided again. You can be misguided by others. You can be misguided by bogi yogis. You could be misguided by gurus who aren't actually gurus. And in this way, your pure understanding of the Shastra again will become compromised, diluted, and you will not be able to grasp the essence. And then he gives the final nail in the coffin. He says, even if you make time, even if you're then, you utilize that time properly and you're not lazy, even if you have the intelligence to understand Shastra, and even if there's no one to misguide you, someone who can actually explain things to you very well, the fifth problem is, when you actually come down to sit and hear Harikatha from a person who can guide you, you can't concentrate because, five, you're always disturbed. Can anyone relate to this? If you can relate to it, put a yes on the chat. How many of you, while listening to this lecture, have something on your mind, some worry, maybe a financial problem, maybe a family problem, maybe a health problem? There's lots of yeses going there, and we're really up against it, that means. So just see the situation of each one of us on this call. Vishwanath Chakravarti Pad is telling us, here we are on a Saturday morning, we're about to enter 2 days where we're going to be entering into the Harikatha of Krishna. Harikatha Amritam, there cannot be anything more powerful than this in order to cleanse your consciousness. You've made the time, congratulations, you have overcome, you have overcome the first obstacle because you're sitting here on the Zoom call, you've made the time. The second one, you're not lazy, you're here, you're looking at the screen, you're making an effort, you have logged onto your devices, very good, you're making the effort, you have overcome the second obstacle. Third obstacle is you're less intelligent. I'm also less intelligent. But the good news is, we have Srila Prabhupada's purports, which are making up for our inability to grasp the knowledge of Krishna consciousness from the Shastras, which are sometimes like a forest of philosophies. You have overcome this by Srila Prabhupada's grace. Fourth one, misguided. I don't think, after hearing the lineup of speakers, myself excluded, I don't think any of these speakers are going to misguide you. They are there. They're going to take you to Krishna. You have, congratulations, you have overcome the fourth obstacle. But now the question is, for the next 2 days, for the coming 5 or 6 sessions of Harikatha, are you going to be able to concentrate? Are you going to be able to focus? Are you going to be able to give your hearts and mind fully to the Katha of Krishna? Are you going to be able to overcome all the disturbances that are in your mind and focus on these divine pastimes? Or are you going to go through this weekend hearing but completely disturbed? Disturbed about all the different things are going on. Disturbed, multitasking while you're supposed to be hearing this katha. Disturbed, trying to solve problems and answer telephone calls and make text messages while this imperishable philosophy is being imparted to you. The question is, are we going to be able to overcome our disturbance and give rapt attention to the katha of Krishna? Yes, I hope you're saying yes on the chat. I see some things coming up on the chat. Potential wasn't concentrating. Yeah, I mean, I said this first because generally at the beginning of the talk, that's when people are most attentive. So I try to give this message at the beginning. After 10 minutes in a Harikatha, other things can become more prominent. So please give your hearts and minds. Once Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was at the Sachinandan Gaudiya Math and he was about to give a Bhagavatam class. And at that time in the evenings, not many people would come. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's talks were quite technical and not everyone could appreciate it. They couldn't all connect with it. But as a sadhu, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was speaking the Harikatha of Krishna. And as he walked into the room, he saw that the devotees had only laid out the mat one quarter because there would only be 5 or 10 people. So they didn't roll the whole mat out because there's only 5 or 10 people. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur looked at all the devotees and he said, "Why have you only rolled the mat out one quarter?" They said, "Guru Maharaj, only 5 or 6 or 7 people are coming to the talk. There's no need." Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, "Where the Hari Katha is going on, where the Leela Katha is going on, where the descriptions of the Tattva of Krishna, Bhakti and Bhagavan are going on, all the demigods are coming. Brahma Yadi Deva Gane, all the Brahma, Shiva, everyone is coming to hear the Hari Katha. So they don't get to sit on the mat. You roll the mat out full way. You may only see 5 or 7 bodies here, but all the demigods are coming to hear Krishna Katha. All the demigods are coming to hear Bhagavat Katha. Because there's nothing else. The queens of Dwarka began hearing Hari Katha from Uddhav in Kusum Sarova. They were distraught because Krishna had left the planet. They came to Vrindavan and they heard that, yes, the gopis were also distraught. And the only way they got some peace of mind is when Uddhav came to them with a message. And he spoke Bhagavat Katha to them. And therefore the queens of Dwarka also went to Kusum Sarova because Uddhav is living in Kusum Sarova. Vrindavane kimapi gulmalatau sadhinam. Uddhav said, "I want to be a creeper in Kusum Sarova. Maybe the gopis will step on me." So they knew Uddhav is in Kusum Sarova. So they went there and it's described in the Bhagavat Mahatmyam that they began to hear Hari Katha from Uddhav and they closed their eyes and they were drinking the Hari Katha of Krishna, hearing all these pastimes, meditating deeply on the meaning, allowing the vibration to penetrate the cores of their hearts. And as they closed their eyes, listening that Hari Katha, they closed their eyes, they left their body. They left the world like that. I mean, imagine if that would happen. You hear Hari Katha, you close your eyes, you become so absorbed. And the next moment you open your eyes, you're in Goloka Vrindavan because you just left in that divine consciousness, the world. This is our aspiration. This is what we want to experience. Therefore, the sages are saying in Bhagavatam, Yatrinvatam rasagyanam svadu svadu pade pade vayam tu na vitripyama uttama shloka vikrame. They say, we don't tire. We're not tired. We don't need a break. We don't need to stop. Yatrinvatam rasagyanam, this rasik wisdom, this not just wisdom, this rasik insight into the inner life of Krishna. Svadu, svadu, pade, pade. At every step, we're relishing more and more and more. So we need to try to come to that point. It's not so easy because we're always disturbed. Upadruta. Don't worry. Just try to forget about your problems for some time. Don't worry. They'll be there once the katha ends. But if you listen to the katha, maybe when you see those problems after the katha, because your vision has been evolved by the imperishable words of the Bhagavatam, you may see your problems in a different way. So let us give our hearts and minds to trying to approach Krishna in Vrindavan. Vrindavan is a special place because in Vrindavan, everyone gave everything to Krishna. In Vrindavan, there was not one sannyasi. You don't hear about sannyasis in Vrindavan. But our acharyas say all the Brajabasis were actually the most perfect and elevated sannyasis you can imagine. They were more than sannyasis. They were the real sannyasis. Why? Because they were moving with the will of Krishna. Like, I give you an example. Okay, I'm going off point, but anyway, let's just go with the flow. Mahaprabhu took sannyas when he was 24. I don't know if there's anyone on the call who's 24, but you can imagine what that means when you take sannyas at the age of 24. So he went to Katwa and he took sannyas. First thing, he lost all of his hair. Second thing, he got a new name. Third thing, he got a new dress. And the fourth thing is he got a new weapon, the danda. Mahaprabhu walked away from Katwa singing the mantra that had been given to him of sannyas. Etam sa asthaya paratmanishtam adhyasitam purvatamer maharshivi aham tarisyami durantaparam tamo mukundam rinisevayeva. With the firm conviction of the sannyasi, aham tarisyami, I will cross over this ocean of material birth and death by taking shelter of the Lord Mukunda Angri. So he went back to, he went walking away from Katwa wanting to go to Vrindavan, but Nityananda misguided him and took him to Shantipur. In Shantipur, an amazing thing happened. Well, many amazing things happened, but one specifically amazing thing that happened is that he was requested by Sachi Mata. I don't want you to go to Vrindavan. I don't want you to go there where I'll never hear about you again. I don't care that you're my son and now you've taken sannyas and that I'm not supposed to have any contact with you, but I can't bear if you will go to Vrindavan and I won't hear about you. I want you to change your plan. I want you to adjust your idea of what you should do in life. I want you to go to Jagannath Puri. And all the Vaishnavas concurred. They said Jagannath Puri and Mayapur are like two rooms in the same house. And therefore, at least if you're in Jagannath Puri, we'll get some news of you. Mahaprabhu adjusted his plans to the plans of the Vaishnavas. And the Acharyas mentioned to us that this showed that he really took sannyas. Sannyas doesn't mean you shave your head. Sannyas doesn't mean you have a mantra. Sannyas doesn't mean you have a new name. Sannyas doesn't mean that you have a certain type of dress. Sannyas means that you're willing to go with the plan of Krishna and the plan of the Vaishnavas, because Krishna's plan comes through the Vaishnavas. So one who is ready to move with the plan of Krishna, whatever it may take, that person is a sannyasi. Therefore, sometimes people think there was no sannyasis in Vrindavan. There were. Everyone was. They were the greatest sannyasis. The word vraja means to move. So one who constantly moves with the plan of Krishna, they are a brajabasi. They're fearless, they're flexible, and they're fully available to move with whatever Krishna's desires may be. So, that's why Vrindavan is so special, because Vrindavan is a place where everyone is a sannyasi in spirit. You know what the word sannyas means? Sun means completely. And yas means to place. So sannyas literally means to place your life before Krishna. In colloquial English, we'll say sannyas means to lay it all down. To lay it all down before Krishna. And that's what the Brajabasis did. And they did it in such a way that Krishna looked at the Brajabasis, the gopis, and said, Napadeham niravadya samyujam svasadu krityam vibhuda yusapiva yama bhajandur jarage hashrinkala samvrishtadva pratiyatu saduna. Napadeham niravadya samyujam. I cannot pay you back in millions and millions of lifetimes because what you've given up to approach me, what you've put on the line in order to come to me, you sacrificed everything. And therefore, I have nothing within my power to repay you. You made me break my promise because in the Gita, I said, Ye yatha mam prapadyante, that I will reward them according to how they surrender to me. You made me break my promise because I have nothing. I have nothing to give you that can repay you for your level of surrender, sacrifice, and selflessness. This is why Vrindavan is so special. So, yes, Vrindavan is a place of holy places. Yes, Vrindavan is a place where you can get many blessings. Yes, Vrindavan is the place where there are sadhus and Vaishnavas. And what we're ultimately trying to get through all of this is we're trying to learn what is the spirit of Vrindavan. What is the spirit of Vrindavan? Therefore, Jiva Goswami says, Vrindavan is not just a place, it's a state of consciousness. And through these talks that you'll hear from the sadhus who are speaking in the upcoming sessions, if we hear without disturbance and we grab some of this spirit and lock it within our heart, then we'll be flying. We'll be flying. Krishna consciousness, no one can be in Krishna consciousness and falling. It's not allowed. It shouldn't be possible. Everyone should be flying. Because we've been given everything we need. Srila Prabhupada has given us everything we need to fly. But we're falling somehow or other. So that means we need to capture the spirit. So it's a valuable retreat. Let's hear something from Krishna's pastimes. Krishna was 1 year old. And, you know, 1 year olds do many amazing things. Krishna, as a one-year-old, did the most amazing things. And one of the most amazing things was that he killed a demon called Trinavarta. One day, Mother Yashoda was playing with Krishna. Krishna was on her lap. And you know, like mothers do and fathers do, that she was throwing Krishna up like that. And Krishna was kind of going up and down. You know, like kids really like that when you throw them up and then you catch them. It's like not so difficult to please children, you know. Start small things like that. They're satisfied. They're happy. And then they grow up and then they need more complicated things. But when you're a small child, simple things like that, you're happy. So Krishna was happy, but of course Krishna was no ordinary child. And as Mother Yashoda was throwing him up and catching him, Krishna thought like, this is nice. I'd like to go a little bit higher. Maybe I could go high. Maybe I could go high into the sky. And you know what? There are all those demigods in the skies and I see that they're always praying to me. So maybe if I could really go high into the sky, then not only could I have a much more adventurous time, but I could also let all those demigods have darshan of me who are always praying to me so devotedly. So once Krishna gets an idea in his mind, good luck if you want to change it. We have our plans, Krishna has his plans, and best thing is get in line with Krishna's plans because Krishna always wins. Krishna has the best plans, therefore he always wins. So Krishna decided, okay, then we have to do something. Krishna knew, Vedaham Sami Vartamanini Charjuna. Krishna knows everything, past, present, future. He's in everyone's heart. He could understand there's a demon coming, a demon called Trinavarta. And therefore, although Mother Yashoda was throwing Krishna up effortlessly, suddenly, out of the blue, totally unexpected, because of Krishna's Aishvarya Shakti, he became very, very heavy. So he became so heavy that Mother Yashoda needed to put him down. So it's like these things are bewildering. One moment, it's like your child, you're throwing him up, everything's fine. And then the next moment, he's just like too heavy, you can't even hold him. Mother Yashoda put Krishna down. Krishna knew, I want to go on a ride, but maybe it's good that Mother Yashoda doesn't come with me because she may not be able to handle it. So Krishna came off Mother Yashoda's lap as she put him down. Mother Yashoda began praying to Narayan, oh my God, there's something strange happening here. Please protect Krishna. And as she was praying, immediately a dust storm came about. Whirlwind, dust, everything was going everywhere. Vrindavan is full of dust. It's famous for its dust. Vrajaraj, so much dust in Vrindavan. So as the wind came, the dust was going everywhere. And as the dust was going everywhere, then Mother Yashoda could not see Krishna. She began looking here, there, everywhere. Where is Krishna? I need to protect him. He's only 1 year old. Like in this dust storm, anything could happen. Frantically looking for Krishna. But because of the wind and the dust and all the elements that were flying around her, it blocked her vision. Just like in our life, when we are blocked by the dust of passion and ignorance, we can't see Krishna. Pasyanapi na pasyati, we can't see Krishna. How will you see Krishna if we are covered by lust, anger, and greed? The dust of lust, anger, and greed. Of course, that was not Mother Yashoda. She was not covered by passion and ignorance. This was Yoga Maya arranging everything. Krishna was there. And as Mother Yashoda and the other residents of Vraj were blinded, then Trinavarta came and immediately took hold of Krishna. As we know, Trinavarta was sent by Kamsa because Kamsa was in deep anxiety that Devaki's child was going to kill him. And he figured out, Krishna is the one I need to kill. Sending many, many demons. So he sent Trinavarta. Trinavarta took Krishna. But hang on, Krishna was so heavy that Mother Yashoda couldn't lift him. So how did Trinavarta lift Krishna? By Krishna's Aishvarya Shakti, he again transformed himself. So he became lighter than the lightest. He can become heavier than the heaviest. And then next moment, lighter than the lightest. You cannot predict what Krishna will do next. Krishna is extreme. Take note, everyone who's trying to establish a relationship with Krishna. He's extreme. One moment he'll go on one extreme, and then another moment he may go on another extreme. But all of it is done in order to increase the pastimes. Lighter than the lightest, Trinavarta took him, thought, my God, that was a piece of cake. No problem. He took Krishna up and then he started going higher and higher and higher, flying into the skies, thousands and thousands of miles up into the air. And Krishna was right there with him, enjoying the ride. It said that Trinavarta took Krishna all the way up 800,000 miles. Who can understand such things? Krishna was enjoying the ride, and then at a certain point, Krishna thought, okay, I've given the demigods darshan 800,000 miles up in the air, or the demigods, they've seen me. I've had a good time. I've got an aerial view. Drone view of Vrindavan, everything I wanted to see. And then Krishna thought, okay, now let's show Trinavarta a lesson. And therefore Krishna, who had become so heavy on Mother Yashoda's lap, who then became so light so that Trinavarta could carry him into the skies, that same Krishna again became very, very heavy to the other extreme. So heavy that Trinavarta was going higher and higher and higher, but then he was going slower and slower and slower because Krishna was getting heavier and heavier and heavier. And then it came to a point where Trinavarta said, I can't go any higher, it's too heavy. And then Krishna, who was engineering the whole situation, then he began to feign as though he's scared. Like, oh no, I'm very high, so I'm very scared. Of course, he's engineering the whole thing, but then he feigns fear. And what does he do? Oh, I'm very scared. He catches on to Trinavarta's neck. So this is it's an amazing situation. Krishna engineered the whole thing, and now he's saying, I'm scared, and now I'm going to hold on to Trinavarta's neck, being heavier than the heaviest. So now just imagine Trinavarta's position. Number one, he can't carry Krishna. Number two, he can't let Krishna go because Krishna is now holding on to him. And number three, he can't even shout for help because Krishna is holding on to him and he's holding on to his throat and choking him. So, I mean, Krishna, sometimes what he does is he snookers you in life. You think like he leaves no other option. Like you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this. What are you going to do? Trinavarta couldn't do anything. He couldn't let Krishna go. He neither could he carry Krishna, neither could he call for any help. And therefore there was only one direction. Trinavarta, who was flying, there was only one direction for him to go. And that was down. And therefore, Krishna holding on to Trinavarta made Trinavarta fall from the sky, fall from 800,000 miles in the air, fall from the heavenly celestial regions back all the way down, straight back into Vrindavan. And that's significant as well, because it's pretty amazing. Imagine if you throw a ball 800,000 miles into the skies. Do you think the ball will land in the same place again? I don't know what the chances of that are. I mean, you've got to be some kind of statistician to find it out. It's basically impossible. But Trinavarta landed right back on a stone slab in Vrindavan. He broke his body, and in this way he left his body, and in this way Krishna liberated Trinavarta by killing him. Now, as you read the commentaries of the Acharyas, you can get more and more and more lessons, more and more understanding. This pastime, if you read it in the Krishna book, it's only literally like 15 or 16 verses. But as you read it, you realize, my God, this is profound. There's so many things to learn here. Today, because of limited time, I'm just going to focus on one thing. But it's very, very significant what Trinavarta represents. In a book called the Chaitanya Shikshamrita, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that every demon in Vrindavan represents a certain anartha within the heart, a certain unwanted quality, characteristic, personality trait that is injurious and which provides an obstacle to the development of Shuddha Bhakti. Therefore, when looking at Trinavarta, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that Trinavarta represents someone who has gone very, very high, who seemingly has gone very, very high in knowledge. However, even though they seem to be very, very learned, even though they seem to have incredible amounts of intelligence, even though they have grasped many, many concepts, because they have pride, because they're speculative, because they haven't simultaneously developed humility along with that knowledge, they're actually, although in one sense very knowledgeable, they're the most foolish, because they don't understand you cannot capture Krishna just through your knowledge. Therefore, Trinavarta represents someone who externally is very knowledgeable, but internally is grossly foolish. It doesn't matter. In the Brahma Samhita, it's explained in a very, very beautiful verse. Pantastu koti satavatsarasam pragamyo vayorathapi manaso munipungavanam. It is profound. Brahma Samhita. Pantastu koti satavatsarasam pragamyo vayorathapi manaso munipungavanam. Even if you travel, even if your mind travels at the speed of the wind for millions of years, okay, understand this. Even if your mind travels at the speed of wind, just like Trinavarta, even if your mind travels at the speed of wind for millions of years, still you will not be able to reach Krishna. Krishna will remain achintya tattve. He will remain completely inconceivable to your consciousness. Pantastu koti satavatsara sampragamyo vayo rathapi manaso munipungavanam. You cannot grasp Krishna through knowledge, simply knowledge. So this is what I want to share with you today as a reflection, as a lesson, and as a very clear check and balance in our spiritual life to ensure that all of this knowledge, gyan, that we're getting as a result of Srila Prabhupada's mercy, that we are able to actually digest this knowledge and benefit from this knowledge in such a way that we will fly in spiritual life instead of falling in spiritual life. Trinavarta thought he was flying, but he ended up falling. And similarly, in Krishna consciousness, someone can get a lot of knowledge and think they're flying, but they can end up falling if that knowledge is not accompanied by proper character. When people come to the manor and I introduce the manor, I ask them, are you a head person or are you a heart person? And then somebody like, I'm a head person. Someone's like, no, I'm a heart. I'm a bit of both. I'm a bit of head, bit of heart. I said, this is the place, Bhakti Vedanta. This is the place where the head and the heart come together. Yes, this is a place where you learn wisdom. This is a place where you learn knowledge. This is a place where you'll get to have insights into life, the universe, everything, and the absolute truth like no other place you can imagine. However, this place is also about the heart, because we teach you how to apply that knowledge, how to live that knowledge, how to absorb that knowledge, and how to utilize that in the knowledge in such a way that that knowledge will not simply remain up there, but will soften your own heart and leave you with the greatest wealth of devotion. So this is how I introduced the Bhaktivedanta Manor, the place where the head and the heart meet. But if you just have head knowledge, but you don't have the right heart, then that knowledge will send you falling down. That is the lesson from Trinavarta. Knowledge must be accompanied by humility. Dainya. In Sanskrit, humility means dainya. And our acharyas explained that dainya is the precursor to prema, love. There is no question of love. There is no question of love without dainya, humility. Not possible. Because humility is what softens the heart. And if you're hard-hearted, how will you love? Not possible. And the opposite of dainya is dambha, which means pride. Today, we have to reflect very, very deeply as we discuss the pastime of Trinavarta, how much of my knowledge that I've gained in Krishna consciousness is accompanied by humility, and how much of my knowledge is accompanied by pride. We have to ask ourselves, is everything I'm learning in the Krishna consciousness movement actually being digested? We have to ask ourselves, is everything I'm learning in all of these seminars, is it helping me to fly in spiritual life, or is it going to cause me to fall down? We have to ask ourselves, is all the knowledge that I'm gaining in Krishna consciousness, is it actually nourishing a deeper relationship with Krishna? And the answer to that question is very much dependent on how much humility or how much pride is accompanying the knowledge that you're gaining. Let's look at humility first. Sometimes they say, like, you want the good news first or the bad news? Like, give us the good news first. We'll have the good news first. Humility. How do we know that the knowledge that we're gaining in Krishna consciousness is accompanied by humility and is nourishing our humility and is therefore helping us to move towards prema? There are some powerful insights in the scriptures. And today I'm going to share a few verses with you which will help you to understand that if someone is actually knowledgeable and absorbing the knowledge in the right way, then there will be certain things that will be observable within them to know that they are actually knowledgeable and learned. And the first thing I want to share with you is that in a very famous verse of the Gita, which many of you know, Krishna says, Aham sarvasya prabhavo matta sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam Buddha bhava samanvita. In this verse, the 8th verse of the 10th chapter of the Gita, Krishna says, if one is a Buddha, if one is actually knowledgeable, if one is really digesting everything that they're hearing with a heart which is full of humility, then one clear sign in them is that their attitude of service, their desire to serve, their desire to sacrifice something for Krishna, their desire to give up what they have and offer it to Krishna, that will be increasing, that will be blossoming, that will be flourishing. Krishna says, one who is in knowledge of me, naturally he will give or she will give their life in service to me. So what if one has lots of knowledge, but all of that knowledge does not increase their service attitude, does not increase their desire to do something for Srila Prabhupada, for the Krishna consciousness movement, and for their lordship, Sri Sri Radha Landanishwara, in a very tangible way? Because Srila Prabhupada always translated bhakti as devotional service. He said it's anushilanam, it's a cultivation, it's a practical activity. If our service attitude, if our seva bhav is not increasing, then we may consider that we don't have the humility. But someone who has humility and a heart which is being filled with knowledge, a humble heart which is being filled with knowledge, will automatically increase in seva bhav. In another very, very famous verse in the Bhagavatam this time, it's explained in the 11th canto, Krishna varnam tisa krishnam sangopangastra parshadam yagye sankirtaner praye yajanti hi sumedasha. Someone who is sumedasha, someone who is actually very intelligent, someone who has actually grasped the knowledge, something else will happen with them. What will happen with such an intelligent person? Yajanti hi sumedasa yagye sankirtana prayer. They will realize that I need to chant the holy name of Krishna. If your knowledge is increasing, but your simultaneous attachment and shelter of the holy name is not increasing, then most likely you're not grasping the knowledge. Because when you actually become Sumedasha, full of knowledge, then you'll realize that actually it's just about chanting the holy name. When Ishwarapuri met Mahaprabhu, then he chastised Mahaprabhu. Murkha tumi tomar nahik Vedanta adhikar, Krishna mantra japa sada ehi mantra sar. Ishwarapuri looked at Mahaprabhu, who was Nimai Pandit, by the way, the most like knowledgeable person in the whole of Navadvip. And what did he say to Nimai Pandit? Murkha tumi, you're a fool. Tomar nahik Vedanta adhikar, you have no qualification to study Vedanta. You will not understand it. Hang on, this is Nimai Pandit, by the way, who just defeated Keshav Kashmiri, the greatest Digvijay Pandit in the whole of India. No, no, Ishwarapuri looked at him and he said, Krishna mantra japa sada e mantra sar. Just chant Krishna's mantra. A mantra sar, this mantra is the essence of everything. When one gets more and more knowledge, one realizes, you know what? I got to get my hand into the bead bag. I got to get my lips chanting the holy name. I got to get absorbed in the transcendental syllables that Rupa Goswami says, when I hear those two syllables, Krishna, I desire thousands of ears and thousands of mouths. If one is not increasing in their dependence on the holy name, their understanding of the importance of taking shelter of Harinam, then their knowledge is not being digested. And here's a final verse for your consideration. In the Gita again, Krishna says, Bahunam janmanam ante jnanavan mam prapadyate Vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudurlabha. Jnanavan mam prapadyate. If one is actually a jnanavan, if one has actually gained knowledge, then what will happen? Mam prapadyate. Then what will happen is that they will imbibe surrender or saranagati in their life. They'll be ready to move with the plan of Krishna. If one has so much knowledge, but then things happen in your life where you're not able to go with the plan of Krishna, where you're not able to accept and embrace everything that Krishna has for you in your life, then it means that the surrender still may not have come. Because surrender means you're willing to go with Krishna's will. And not just willing, you embrace it because you are conquered by Krishna. Because you know, Krishna, how can he ever do anything? He's my best friend. How can he ever do anything that will cause me harm? And therefore, there's such a natural surrender that comes from someone who is actually absorbing the knowledge. So now, my dear friends on the call, let us think very, very deeply, maybe for months, maybe for years, and maybe some of us on this call, even for decades, we have been blessed with so much knowledge in Krishna consciousness. But now we have to ask ourselves, have we increased in our service attitude? Have we increased in our dependence on the holy name? Have we increased in our saranagati? If we have, you're flying and you'll fly higher and higher, because that means the knowledge that you're gaining is being implanted within a heart which has humility. And therefore, the knowledge is bringing about its fruits. And therefore, when the knowledge brings about its fruits, then you fly. However, now let us consider, what will happen if we don't have a heart of humility, but we have a heart of pride? Balaram was traveling everywhere. And he came to the forest of Naimisharanya. And in Naimisharanya, there was a very famous sage, Romaharshan Sutta. And Romaharshan Sutta was lecturing on the Vyasasan. And as soon as Balaram entered, now remember, Balaram is an eminent person. He's Adi Guru. He's the original Guru. He walked in and Romaharshan Sutta, who was speaking so many knowledgeable things on the Vyasasan, Romaharshan Sutta didn't even get up. He didn't even show his respect to Balaram. He didn't even...